International rugby is back. Scotland will host world champions South Africa, Southern Hemisphere heavyweight Australia, Pacific Islanders Tonga, and the exciting Japan at BT Murrayfield this October and November. Adult tickets start from just £16 and kids can come for a quid. For more information on the Autumn Nation series and to secure your tickets for the return of international rugby to BT Murrayfield, check out scottishrugby.org. We can't wait to welcome you back. Welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. This week's episode, we're going to look ahead to the URC, the United Rugby Championship, kicking off this weekend. Talk to Edinburgh Rugby's James Lang and the returning hero, Nunky Weir, from Glasgow Warriors. We're also going to catch up with Rachel from Italy and debrief the first couple of games, certainly that second game and that great victory against Spain. And we'll look ahead to the all-important game against Ireland on Saturday as well. I'm delighted to say we've got a couple of new signings, or new-ish signings, with us this afternoon. Duncan Weir returned to Glasgow Warriors. Great to have Duncan back. And James Lang up from Premiership Champions Harlequins joining Edinburgh this year. Both Scottish internationalists, both know each other well. We'll be looking forward to the new season, I guess. Listen, day off for both of you, but thanks for jumping on. We're going to have a kind of preview to URC, United Rugby Championship. But first of all, how are we? How's the bodies on the Wednesday before the league kicks off?
I am sore. I'm all good. We got a good day of work on us yesterday, so bit tired after a double date Monday, Tuesday, but no, I rest up today and then, yeah, you know what a team runs like. It's short and sharp these days and then jumping the plane over to Belfast.
It's your Friday night against Ulster, Dunk.
Yeah.
Langer's your Saturday, but you've the Edinburgh day off today as well, but your game's Saturday at Edinburgh Rugby Stadium, 5:15. How's the preps going from your end?
Yeah, really well. I mean, it was good win on Saturday in the pre-season match against Benetton. It was my first game for the club, so that was class to get out there in front of like the crowd at the new stadium and stuff. So the prep's been good this week. Confidence is high. And as Donkey said, a little bit sore, but it's nice to put your feet up for today and then roll on to tomorrow. Like the back end of the week usually isn't the hardest, so we've done our work yesterday. And it's just kind of fine-tuning some things and, yeah, getting ready to hit the ground running against Scarlets this Saturday.
Yeah, I mentioned that. Like you pick up on the game on Saturday against Benetton pretty quick. Some errors, but that's understandable. But, I mean, the game was quick. It looked exciting. Great to get a win, 50 points as well. Most of your rugby has been played in the Premiership. They actually played against each other often in the Premiership. But I know it was a pre-season friendly, James, but it was probably a hint or a taste of what URC rugby is going to be like. How did you find it? Was it different, similar? Any changes already?
No, definitely. Yeah. It was different. I played Benetton a couple of times. But it's my first. I'm not used to playing on the 4G pitch. Kind of getting used to that. Will be a challenge against. It's very fast, as you said. I only got half with the weather as well. I was knackered. I mean, Dunkey would tell you that playing 4G and stuff. When the weather, it is really fast, and it's a great game to watch and great game to play. But it does take its toll. But no, I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to get started this weekend. And obviously, the following week, then we'll have Benetton again, so that I'm sure they'll be up for that to get back one back on us. So yeah, that'd be exciting game.
You do know the 4G pitch as well, don't you? Scotson, and then Worcester last year, six ways 4G pitches as well. It does make the game quicker, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, and especially I find it in the kind of winter months when it's a wet night and it's maybe a traditional grass pitch, it'll be slow and defences are probably on top, but in attack you can actually still move the ball relatively easily because you've got a good surface underneath you. You're not the ball's not getting covered in mud and all the rest of it. Maybe a few rubber crumbs here and there, but generally it opens up more options to attack in poor conditions.
That's the key, isn't it?
Like I still would prefer a grass pitch, like a good quality grass pitch. I think most boys would go down. I know Joe Marler came out of the weekend with a couple of tweets. Langers probably knows more than me on that one, but
I'm saying nothing.
Yeah, he's out there and open about it. I think there's definitely a place for it.
Aye.
I just think if I was given a nice grass pitch, then you always take it. But
it's funny because the point you mentioned there is, now you think about rugby at the moment, like a lot of it is defensive orientated, and the thing that breaks defenses or can cause that bit of creativity is the speed. If the attack's organised quicker than defence, and I suppose that is, as you say, the advantage that the artificial pitches can give you. So I mean, a lot of teams playing them now, but that's exactly what you're looking for, isn't it? The accuracy in attack and what you're doing to get that half second just to be ahead of defence.
Yeah. And the old bounce of the ball in the 4G as well, that can bite you. But sometimes, obviously, you get the rewards with it as well. And with the new laws of the 50-22, there'll be a few people cursing and swearing at the 4G bounces that they get. They don't get the reward of the line-out in the opposition 22.
I'm going to touch on that, actually, come to that later on, that the 50-22, a couple of new laws in around, obviously, new-ish laws have been in for, yeah, a couple of months or so, and some of the rugby we've seen, we'll touch on that. But before we go there, Dunk, you're delighted to be back. Delighted to have you back in Scottish Rugby, Glasgow Warriors. What have you noticed a change in coming back to Glasgow? There'll be some similarities, but there'll be a lot of change as well.
Yeah, no, I think there was three members of staff still at the club, and maybe eight players.
Really?
Maybe at a push. So obviously the third member of staff being Bagal as well.
Aye.
Who was a player. So he's
in
full circle. I know he's the top dog. But yeah, no, it's
that's a big change, isn't it? That's a bigger change than I assumed there would be
It's been quite seamless coming back in. It's been strange. I think obviously knowing that I was coming up from just before Christmas time, like you pay in Lions, you'll be the same. When you sign for somewhere, you pay probably closer attention. Obviously, I followed Glasgow when I was down south, and you just try and catch as many games as you possibly can. So you kind of get a vibe of the place, and you see, obviously, the boys playing and what they can do. So, there is still Wilson's there, so he drives a good culture of it and a lot of fun around the place. So, it's been really nice putting on a Glasgow jersey and stepping into Scotstoun. I guess I didn't have to understand the new facilities and know how things work. You just kind of seamless transition back into the place, and it's been really comforting.
I suppose one more point on that, are there nerves? Because it is, as you say, there's a lot of change. I know it's similar, the same place. You know what you're representing, you know who you're representing, you know they value you, but is there still nerves coming back in to do it again?
Yeah, there's always going to be, and you know me personally, so you know the wee angry, stubborn, that competitor inside you. As soon as you come across the whitewash on a game day, that pours out of me. Unfortunately, too much at times, and sometimes
never
just on the limit. So, I think there's good nerves. Obviously, Ross went really well at the tail end of last season, so competition for places is going to be huge as well. So I know I'm going to have to play my best rugby to play, and that's only good for the club. That there's guys there that are challenging for places, and hopefully just pushes the level of performance up week in, week out.
Absolutely, there's a squad depth at Glasgow that is really impressive, and I know the fight for starting berths across all positions is going to be tough all year.
Domingo over with the Argentine squad as well. He's a real bit quite talented player and definitely will add quality to the match day squad whenever he's selected.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be a long season. It's going to be every game massively meaningful in terms of URC, a lot of big opponents. Langers, you come from, you played under 20s grade age grade rugby with Scotland, you played international rugby with Scotland, but I say most of your club rugby was with Harlequins in the Premiership. And like Dunk, you knew you were coming reasonably, I suppose early before the end of the season, you made that commitment. How excited were you about joining Edmonton, and what were the, you know, what were the clinching factors that that decided to make the move?
Yeah, like I signed just after the Autumn Nations Cup. Just way before the end of the season. And I was buzzing. I have aspirations to, I want to play more for Scotland. And I felt that obviously with Andre coming in as marquee signing with Quinns and stuff, kind of like it would have been blocked a little bit, my game time. And that was a big factor for me to make the move. I mean, I was with Quinns for 5 years and I owed a lot to Quinns and I enjoyed every second I was there. But I felt for my career, for what I wanted to achieve, that I needed, like, now was the time to kind of make that change and leap of faith, really. And luckily, like, Edinburgh were keen, and I met with Cockers at the time when I was up here. For the camp, met him a couple of times, and afterwards I was kind of sold, put pen to paper. Obviously, Cockers then leaves. I found out just on Twitter, I think. So there's a little bit of, I think there's 4 or 5 days of like being a bit limbo, being like, who's not knowing, who's it going to be? Is the guy going to like me? Like, and then every thought came into my head, and then obviously Mike Blair was announced, which was great. But obviously, I know him from camp, and I know what type of rugby he would want to play, a quite expansive a game, and kind of that suits what I've been used to at Quinns the last 5 years. So yeah, when that was announced, then I was raring to go. I couldn't really wait, and yeah, go up here, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it up here so far.
You say the way Mike could play, we've seen already, and we know we've seen his work as a player, but then especially with the national team as well, and he's coaching him with Glasgow and the national team. He does like an expansive kind of all-court approach at the right time. But that not only is what you're used to at Quinns, but actually suits you as well from my point of view. I mean, you're kind of just distributing ball playing 10, 12, play really anywhere across the back line.
19, 14, 15.
13, 14, keep going.
That's 23.
Exactly. But that suits you as an individual and what you can bring to that game as well, isn't it? Because they're hopefully the way the league's set up, and we've talked about the artificial pitches and increasing number of them as well. We want to see attacking rugby as fans looking in. And I see kind of your role important to that if you are playing 12, because you're that ball player that, yeah, you attack, you run lines as well. But that distribution's key to that attacking format, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's my best position. That's my favourite position, 12. So that's where I want to be playing. And under Mike and under the system, I think that's where it could be really exciting for the team. I guess it is a little bit different to what Edinburgh played last year, from what I hear. What I saw, as Donkey said, when I knew I was coming up, I watched a few of the games and stuff, and all the fundamentals are still there, about defence and stuff. But it's kind of like the balance now of we want to attack a bit more, and we have the right players, and we have a really good squad for anyone across the board to be playing in that 15 and 23 to do so and play the game plan. And that's what's really exciting.
Have you guys played together actually as 10 and 12?
Autumn Nations.
Italy?
Yeah.
The away game in Italy last year.
Yeah.
No.
I suppose it's great synergy right there.
That's it. It just came right back, flooding back to you. I suppose not just the question you dunk, but not just because of language, but how important as a 10 is it that you have a 12 that talks you through the game, that helps you the game, that gives you options? It's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, like at 10, obviously you're looking at the quality of the ball, the previous phase, how quick it's coming out the ruck. But obviously, if you've got someone outside you that's dictating the forwards or making calls, that's got their eyes up the field and can scan defences, it makes your job a lot easier. You just have to pull the trigger to what they're saying, and you buy into what they're calling, which is, it's great. Albeit you
don't always listen to
as well. Yeah.
No, I know as a 10, you don't always listen. It's great, it's there, but you've got the final call.
Yeah, you still want to look up and make decisions on yourself, but when someone's bossing you around, I've always enjoyed it. I think the first real player at 12 that done that for me in my career was Peter Horn.
Yeah.
And obviously he's a natural ball player that can play in at 10 as well. And Langers is the same. So those type of hybrid 10-12s. I actually whenever you get in training teams or whatever and you get a role, a shot at 12, mm-hmm. you actually can help. Like when you go back to 10, you actually know little wee things that can help you along your in the game, and you've got just so much more time to look up the field and organise people. It's quite refreshing at times when you get to play a different position at training. And obviously I'm 5'8" at the best of times, so maybe not playing in games at 12, but but it's actually when you get the comms into the 10 and you're pulling the strings one out, it's those eyes and ears are really vital if you want to play expansive rugby. And obviously with Mike going into Edinburgh, yeah, it's hugely exciting to see what rugby the guys can play.
I suppose one thing where that communication and that help coming in this year has got to be real important, Langers, is around the new laws we've spoken about already. There's 50-22, there's goal line dropout, there's one or two other changes in and around the tackle and the latch in play. But I suppose that the idea is that you're trying to force defenders out the front line into the backfield, especially with the 50-22, to create a bit more space to attack with ball in hand. Do you think that'll happen? And does it? I assume it excites you as attack-minded players to figure out where that space is.
Yeah, definitely. I think it will happen. It's definitely a good rule. But I mean, I watched the Bristol Saracens match, and there were still so many kicks. I think there was like 42 kicks within the first 30 minutes. So I think it'll take teams maybe a bit of time getting used to the backfield coverage. That's definitely something that the defence coaches will be looking at, how to stop that, and attack coaches how to best utilise it, whether that's in phase play or strike moves. Maybe kind of like, I think we'll see a lot of moves or scrums or lineouts to set up for that exact kind of like play to get that 50-22. But I think it's a great rule, and I think it's great that it's been brought in, and hopefully we'll get a bit more exciting rugby to be played.
It's almost
it's,
as if
it's Duncan, funny that gonna... there's only been like one or two each game as well.
I know.
Like,
I know.
And I think that those numbers are just going to go up and up. Like,
and then do you think as a result
people clock on it?
As a result, then do you think defensive shape will have to change, won't it? Because it's a massive concession if you're conceding 50, 60 metres and possession.
Yeah, it's a real momentum shifter, isn't it?
Yeah,
like you can see teams having to respect that backfield space, and obviously they'll have to cover off both touchlines, but that might create more space down the middle, and you might get more attacking kicks through the middle and some chases there as well if the covering players get too wide. But yeah, it's like you say, it's only going to help to see more attacking rugby, and yeah, it's great for me as a natural kicker. I get to well of the ball and it's more space.
Fight the space. we'll see about actually the French league started a couple of weeks ago, saw loads of kind of attempts at it anyway as well. But as you say, Dunk, the numbers of them being successful yet hasn't, I don't think, had a big enough effect to change the shape, but I'm sure it will. It will come. On to this weekend, I say Friday night we'll start with you, Dunk, away in Ulster. A team I suppose you know well, know the coaching staff well. Dan McFarlane's over there, Roddy Grant as well, who's we know well from his time with Edinburgh and Scotland side. So you always know playing Ulster, the first thing away from is physicality, isn't it? They have a dynamism, a physicality. They've had a couple of games, warm-up games against Saracens, lost the first one at home, actually beaten up a wee bit in all honesty. I saw some of that, but then won away from home and really impressively. So do you think, as always, it's that dynamic physicality is the first thing you have to match in, over the Kingspan?
Yeah, it's probably my favourite place to play outside of.
You've got a couple of good Glasgow. Memories of there, eh?
I remember it was maybe my first when I fully had signed with Glasgow. It was my first couple of starts away from home. Mm-hmm. Was over there and absolutely loved it. Like,
was that not when you kicked the goal in the last minute to win for your own half?
Potentially. I remember Welling won over from 60, and I've never been able to do 1-6 since. And again,
A match winning drop goal for Edinburgh out there as well, I think. If it,
Aye, that's right.
I'll drop that one in there as well, is it?
There you go.
No, now that you mentioned that, that was right. No, it's obviously a brilliant place to play. Like you say, it's going to be a real physical challenge. They've added a little bit of more forward dominance play, mm-hmm. probably like set piece wise with Dan there. Mm-hmm. Since I last played them, it looks like they're obviously we know he's a quality operator and line out in scrum, so we're going to have to be in tip top form up front. I think your pack generally sets the tone away from home at times as well. And we've actually, I feel our forwards line out defence has been brilliant the first couple of pre-seasons game. We've nicked a lot of ball off opposition, so. If we can put as much pressure and squeeze them at set piece, and then yeah, that would be great if we can get those same rewards. But ultimately, it's going to be where the territory battle lies, and obviously that physical battle.
Yeah, it's an intriguing one. It's I say the dynamism always struck me about Ulster. They've got that physicality, but they can play quickly as well, and mm-hmm. a few quality players. Langers, Edinburgh play. Scarlets at home 5:15 Saturday new Edinburgh Rugby Stadium, and the Scarlets are quite funny. Ironically, it was the last game Edinburgh played at the end of the Rainbow Cup last year. 28-all draw in the sun in the west coast of Wales. But there's quite interesting. Last year Edinburgh won away from home in the league, they lost at home and they had a 28-all draw, so not a huge amount between the sides, but two coaches know each other well as well. Mike and Blair, obviously, in his new starting Championship game as head coach, but Dwayne Peel is opposite number, Mike's opposite number for a long time in club and country as a Wales scrum half, is starting as a head coach in the Scarlets side as well. What do you think the Scarlets will pose? I say it's quite difficult because they are quite an attack minded team themselves, but with a new head coach, have you had a good look at them and thinking what's coming?
As you said, that they're quite an attack minded team, and I know I'm not dealt with Dwayne Peel too much. I played Ulster when he was assistant coach there, and I know that he'll bring a similar kind of game plan to what Mike will want us to play. Is very expansive rugby, but I think for us we need to just get that balance right. You've probably seen it if you've watched the pre-season games. It's been attack galore, and maybe too much. Lads have been getting a bit too excited with the new pitch and stuff, and kind of like the shackles are off. But I think for this week, we're going to have to be a bit more balanced and really take it to them physically, because if you let them get over the game line, let them get quick ball, they're going to be very dangerous with the strike players they have out wide, in McNichol and others. So I think that's for us at the forefront of our mind, is just kind of shocking them and winning that physical battle. And then I mean, with the strike players we have as well in attack, then we can really sting them if we get that. In the flip side, if we get that quick ball and we're dominating both attack and defence, I think it'll be a good day. But yeah, it's definitely gonna be a tough game. I'm really excited. It'll probably be a different affair to the one they played last year. But I think the boys were still complaining about it. 29 degrees or something it was when they played them away, and I can imagine playing in that weather. So I think it's going to be a bit of a cooler affair, but I definitely want to watch and one on the side to play.
I think in pre-season you always have the opportunity to, I don't know, play more expansive and just get the ball through the hands, but then as soon as it's the real deal in the league, then you'll probably see more of game management in your own half, and you're seeing more kicking and kind of try and kind of sniff each other out instead of a wide-to-wide expansive game when there's no real consequences. But yeah, obviously, if that space opens up with the two boys in the backfield at times, then you can go and take it. But yeah, I think there'll be more, not less exciting, but you know, it's going to be more like pulling teeth in it.
Aye, it's a balance that's key, really, isn't it? The balance between the styles of play and taking opportunity when they come, but the tension just rises, especially this year where, United Rugby Championship has got new additions to the four South African sides. There's very few of the, I think there's only one game during an international window. So every game is top level, really highly competitive, and getting off to a good start is really important for everyone. And everybody knows that. Obviously, Glasgow away, Edinburgh at home. We at some point in the future, we can have a debate as to see where you'd rather start, if it was away or at home, with the pressures and the tensions you talk about, Dunk. But we wish you both well and both teams well as we kick off this weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
I'm delighted to say Rachel joins us from Italy. The Wi-Fi isn't great, but we'll do our best. But listen, that doesn't matter. It's great to see you. Disappointing opening game, the loss to Italy. I know it was a big game. We wanted to get off to a good start, and it was, frustrating first half, really, wasn't it? But then roll on 6 days, and that game versus Spain at the weekend, 27-22 win, that doesn't tell half the story. A great performance, a brilliant game in actual fact, but firstly, tell us, because it was a do or die, wasn't it? It was you had to win, and you did win. Tell us about the emotions, especially the last few minutes of that game.
Yeah, no, those are the exact words that I used to the girls before we went out at the start of the game. And I think, the buy-in in terms of the attitude and the heart that everyone put into it for the full 80 minutes. And I think, like you say, the last 5 minutes couldn't have been tighter. And I think shows the growth in the team. We were parked in our 22 for, I think, the best part, 5-10 minutes. Gave away a couple of silly penalties, knock-ons, bits and bobs like that, but managed to weather the storm. I think, the girls that came off the bench were massive for us. And I think, again, that shows kind of the growth and the depth of our squad and the ability of everyone within the 28 to do their job and know their role to come on in that kind of high-pressure situation and close out the game. I was on the bench for the last 5 minutes and it was not a happy place. I was much more comfortable on the pitch, but yeah, it was super stressful, but like absolute credit to everyone that went on the pitch because it was a full squad effort.
I know that is the case, isn't it? Sometimes the most calm place to be is on the field because you can affect it, you're involved in it, you can do something about it. I know exactly how you feel because we were watching as well. It was tense, but you say there's a couple of things in there. You say heart and determination and guts and all the rest of it alone doesn't get you success. It's the platform and it's a non-negotiable, but you need that element of control, you need the cohesion, you need to have an understanding. And defensively, the discipline you showed there, I know you gave one or two penalties away, but it was a sustained period. But having the discipline to stick to the system, to trust each other, to get the call right, to position right in that last 5 minutes, that was pretty special as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think defensively, it was an area we wanted to sharpen up on, particularly in our 22. We weren't happy with how we defended against Italy on our try line. It wasn't our processes, it wasn't what we trained, and we really kind of let ourselves down there. So that was a big work on going into the game. So I think to do that, not only throughout the game, but particularly in that last 5 minutes to hold them out was a massive step forward for us. It was really, really impressive. And discipline was massive as well because it did let us down in parts of the game. Not necessarily just discipline, but unforced errors, both in the Italy game and the Spain game, is something that has let us down and leaked points where we really didn't need to. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something we are looking to put right going into the final game. But particularly in that last 5 minutes, we did weather the storm well in that respect.
But you did earlier on in the game as well, because in all honesty, like, I know we've spoken a lot about the opponents and we've spoken a lot about Italy and how they play and how sharp they are, but I actually thought Spain were really sharp as well. Like, watching the game, it was really enjoyable, but actually I'd love to see a lot more teams attack like how Spain attack. I know probably the supporters hat on it and looking at it, I thought the midfield were excellent. I thought your tries were excellent as well, but they really did pose a handful defensively. It wasn't just kind of one form of attack. They were attacking all over the place. And to wrestle momentum back probably before half-time or just stay in the game just before half-time, I thought was really good as well, on top of that last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think Spain probably play a bit of a hybrid between Italy and Ireland in terms of the way they play. They do... they're a bit more structured in terms of their forward play, so they do carry really hard, tight off nine, quite consistently. So they kind of get a lot of numbers into that first kind of couple of breakdowns and try and pull as many of us into that breakdown as they can. And then they look to go wide and throw the ball around a little bit. And they do play with ambition similar to Italy. But have that kind of, you know, with Pat Garcia at nine, they have that kind of influential kind of leader decision maker there that kind of, I guess, gives them a little bit more structure than maybe what Italy play with, which they play a lot more kind of just play what they see. And it's, that's, you know, can be so difficult to defend against. But like you say, Spain absolutely had threats all over the pitch. So I think that period, probably halfway through the first half, where we really kept them into their half, they had the ball for quite a large period of time, but they were going absolutely nowhere. That was really pleasing from a defensive point of view. There was a couple of times we maybe messed up defensively, kind of just not wrong numbers, particularly in the lead up to their, I think maybe their second try in the far corner, where we defended on our try line for a long period of time. And there was one phase where we switched off and got our numbers wrong on our fold, and they got away and got a try. So that's the difference in these games, is just those little decisions and kind of poor game management and stuff like that. But absolutely, in terms of how we manage the momentum, I think our kicking game was better than it's ever been. You know, we played territory really well. Our kick chase was really effective. So we pinned them in much better than we did against Italy. So again, that's something we need to just keep pushing forward to play in the right areas and not put so much pressure on ourselves.
Looking ahead as well, I mean, it's Ireland this week, 5 p.m. Saturday. And basically, it's not winner takes all. There's four teams. Everybody's in the same points. Everybody's got 5 points. Our points difference isn't as great as other teams. But having been the second game on Sunday as well, you knew you had to win that because, you know, the other game had, it was Italy and Ireland, wasn't it? So Ireland won that. So it was one win apiece. So, I mean, the pressure to deliver on Sunday was big, but it's going to be big this week again against Ireland. You will be the second game on again, whether that makes any difference. Like Spain play at 2 p.m. So you might have I suppose it doesn't really matter, does it? You know what you've got to do. You've got to get and win.
Yeah. So I think, I guess, rule-wise, or how the competition runs, whoever is on the top points will go to the World Cup, and whoever comes second will go into the repechage. But if, for example, we win and Italy win, it comes down to, rather than the points difference, it comes down to who beat who when we played. So in an ideal world, we would like Spain to win. You know, the best case scenario would be Spain win and we win. And in an ideal world, we got a bonus point and they didn't. But if we both got bonus points and we both didn't, we would go through and they would go to the repechage. So it's quite complicated, and it's literally any team can win it. Any team can come second. So like you say, we'll know the result of the previous game. It won't affect us at all because we have to win the game. Like, first and foremost, we have to win the game. So yeah, it's an exciting final day. And like, for a spectator or a, you know, unbiased fan, it's probably going to be an entertaining day of rugby. But for, I'm sure all of our families watching, it's going to be a nervous one.
No, absolutely. It's good to know that that won't really affect it in terms of preparation, in terms of the execution of performance. You're just going to get out and do it.
Yeah.
And delivered that under that pressure last weekend, which I think is a certainly good foundation to rely on and to take strength from, really, because it was a, you know, sleeves up moment, almost line in the sand moment. So have that behind you is all good experience for Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's been a really good couple of weeks, and it does very much feel that we are kind of, I guess, building and peaking towards the final game, which is exactly where you want to be.
There was a big interest in our household. We burnt the tea watching it last Sunday. We're all glued to it. Just in terms of the game, the finish, it was really good under pressure. So well done, and good luck against Ireland this weekend.
Thank you very much. And in terms of rugby back home, how is everything going Super Six-wise over the last couple of weekends?
Well, big weekend last weekend, the three games, obviously. The first one was Knights Watsonians, which is the top two down at the Green Yards. Do you see that?
Yeah, we
Knights
watched
were
it.
Good, weren't they?
Yeah, very good. It was a funny game by the end with a number of injuries and cards and whatever else, and it looked like somebody put a hose over the pitch or something. Everyone could barely keep their feet.
Yeah, the Knights. The one thing though, Rue is not getting the bonus point victory, I think, because they seemed in pretty good control for most of the game. Watsonin's dug in and fought hard, but with the yellow cards as well, Knights were against 30 men at one point, or sort of two yellow cards certainly for Watsonin. I think they might be a bit frustrated they didn't get that bonus point victory, but they got the victory. The driving game was good, the defence is outstanding. I thought that the game was a high quality, in all honesty. Stirling and Bears had another cracker at the weekend. It's the two teams that seem to go down to the wire every game they play, and Boroughmuir Bears lost out this time again at the death. Stirling scored, I was at 27-23, Stirling scored with pretty much the last play of the game. And Stirling are good to watch. They're great to watch. They really are. Their mistake count's still high. It'll still frustrate Ben Cairns. But they play some lovely attack in rugby. It's just for them trying to get that accuracy. And then Bears, honestly, it's like I've never seen a team that have lost so many games in the final couple of minutes. So it's frustrating for them. But Stirling came out on top at home. And then Lair got a good win away from home on Sunday at Goldmaker. Air looked strong. They get stronger every week. They look as if they probably will be in contention in the final, I think, the way they're going in terms of their improvement game on game and their accuracy, their understanding to win. Kind of 28-0 bonus point victory away from home at Goldmaker on Sunday shows that their quality side. Heriots didn't help themselves. They turned over the ball too often and couldn't really keep possession to build pressure. But look as if they'll be becoming a tough nut to crack. So that was the games last weekend prior to you guys getting off. Yeah. Thank you all once again for listening. We'll be back next week where we'll have a look at the opening weekend of the URC, and indeed we'll know the qualification status of the Scotland Women.